It is Sunday morning on WFAN, and good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. After our 8 o'clock update, Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge program. Ed Randall will be by talking baseball after our 9 o'clock update on The Fan this Sunday morning. We are going to move into a very interesting area of discussion on our program. I've been looking forward to this discussion. Because what we're going to be talking about is a section of New York City that a lot of people listening to us are familiar with, some in a passing fashion, some may even be intimately familiar with. But there's been a lot happening and a lot that potentially can happen in the section of Manhattan known as the East Village. Yep, that's what we're going to be talking about. And I'm very pleased to say that we have joining us on our program in this hour, Jorge Diaza. Jorge is joining us to share some thoughts. He has an interesting background as well. First of all, good morning. Welcome to our program.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you for having me.
I'm very pleased to have you join us on this program because you have an interesting background in having been involved in as a business owner, also having been involved in trying to do some community leadership and organization. I like to start as simply as possible. When I say the East Village to you, how do you describe what the East Village is like?
That's a good question. Well, first and foremost, I think of it as home. I also think of it as it's really these days a special enclave now in Manhattan that I think more so than others, particularly in downtown, still reminds us of the past, but is obviously still a very visual signal of what's to come in the future. It's a place that has changed significantly since I've lived here over the course of the last 13 to 15 years, but still has the flavor by which many of us long-term residents associate with it. It's a place where on Saturdays in Tompkins Square Park, you will see, for instance, on the corner of 7th Street and Avenue A, a bread line for the local homeless. And yet 24 hours later on that same corner, there'll be a local farmer's market for a number of the newer residents. So there's a lot of dichotomy with the East Village, and it's also a place that for the most part has been hasn't been tapped yet by large national brands and corporate brands that we see now, for instance, in areas further west like Chelsea or even now in the West Village. It's still a place where you see these very local small business brands that have become very much iconic to the area.
Mm. When did you move to Lower East Side or East Village?
Over 13 years ago, I became an official resident of the East Village, Lower East Side.
And why did you move there?
I found that I was always somehow venturing out or ending up in the East Village area. I've lived in New York for about 20 years, the first 7 of which were on the West Side. And I found that the East Village was a place where it was always very trendy. There was always a strong youth movement, and there was always a sense of artistic pride. And for whatever reason, I was always ending up there at night or oftentimes, you know, during the day. So I figured I might as well just get closer to the action.
And what's it like to live there?
There's truly, I think the name is it's very apropos. You know, it feels like a village. It feels like this small, isolated section where you can truly have a neighborhood, you know, in downtown. You have to understand, you know, for example, I think part of the reason is the subway lines, they basically outline us, but there are not stops in the very center of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
For this reason, when you're walking in and around the neighborhood, you tend to stumble on your neighbors that much more often, because everybody's usually going towards the same areas. The neighborhood itself is highlighted by this prominent park, Tompkins Square Park, in the center of it. The neighborhood also has this, it has a zoning restriction with respect to the vertical height of buildings south of 14th Street. So you actually have these wonderful panoramic views of the Manhattan skyline throughout most of these areas due to these low-rising buildings. Again, it definitely has that true, quote-unquote, small village feel.
Opening a business like you did along with your partner in the venture, Marissa Miller, you were opening a restaurant. What was that like?
Well, it's a lot can go into that answer, but it can be really difficult nowadays. I think opening a restaurant today in New York, particularly a brick and mortar, meaning not part of a larger operation like a hotel, mm-hmm. or a mall, for instance, there's a lot more risk and liability involved, even compared to, you know, let's say 10 or 12 years ago. So it can be scary, but it can also be very exhilarating. It was a big decision for both Marissa and I to not only open our own restaurant in New York, but to be able to do so right from within our own neighborhood, the East Village, and contribute back to it. So we're fortunate to find a space that made sense for us, and amazingly right on Tompkins Square Park. But at the same time, you'd think that certain things would be a little easier and the neighborhood would be offer a bit more assistance in making that kind of local investment. But in reality, today's age, that's not the case.
Now, the restaurant has a Basque cuisine. What's involved in that?
Well, when you're dealing with the Basque region of Spain, the northernmost region of Spain, it's very much known for its cuisine and its food from all types and styles. There are a few different primary genres when it comes to food in this area. I guess a number of people in the audience who ventured out there, the first thing they think of is maybe walking into these small taverns or bars that are open all day, all night. And the first thing you think of is all these elaborate small plates and food items decorating the bar of each of these taverns. And those are called pinchos. It's essentially the tapa of the Basque region. That's the first thing many of us think of when we think of the food of the Basque region or the Basque region in general. There are also their extremely high-end Michelin-grade restaurants that they're very famous for, such as like the Mugaritz and the Arzaks of the world. But really, it's about these taverns that are very neighborhood, that everyone tends to glom to and have the most elaborate small bites that you could imagine. So it's also very value-based.
Hmm.
The restaurant that we opened named Denostia, which is the name of the city of San Sebastian in the Basque language, centers around this tavern concept of the Basque cuisine.
Very interesting discussion we're having. We've really just started it with Jorge de Yaza, and he is joining us for this hour of our program on The Fan. We are in a discussion with Jorge de Yaza. He has joined us by phone on our program. We really just started talking a little bit about the East Village, and there's been a lot of change, obviously, in what some people refer to as Alphabet City since, pick a decade like the 1990s, okay, end of the last century. How have you viewed that change?
I think that the area here, particularly in Alphabet City, has almost become defined by this change, and particularly the word change. How do I view it? Well, I think that most of it has been positive, in the sense that I think we can all recall a time not so long ago when a good deal of this area was an area that, you would avoid walking through at night. I recall when, you couldn't even get a cab to kind of drop you off in certain parts of this area. That's definitely changed, and that's practically non-existent now. So I would definitely view that as positive. I think, when we think change, especially in like these local areas, you think gentrification. There's definitely been a good amount of that, particularly over the course of the last dozen years here. Some of it for the positive, some of it not as much so. It's a tough balance, because you definitely do not want to displace any of the locals that have been here for decades and have added quite a bit, if not defined the community. Yet at the same time, the community and the area has an appetite for growth. And with that, you're going to attract newer residents, not from the area. I think the East Village, compared to most of the neighboring areas, particularly in downtown Manhattan, has done a fairly good job with this. It just so happens that the East Village, the growth and the change has been very much concentrated and packed into the last dozen or so years. So each year there's been, I think, major changes with respect to the profile of the real estate here, definitely with the cost of the neighborhood. And I think that would be one of the big negatives that is definitely factoring into the displacement of a number of people that probably, made the East Village really what it is from a social standpoint.
In terms of improvements that could take place in the area of community relations, and I guess even improving the environment overall, what would you point to?
I think that I think there's several key areas. Number one, for example, there are definitely certain stretches of property here that have really important footprints within the outline of the local community, and some of these properties have been in this, some of these properties have literally been defined by a lack of movement and essentially a type of bureaucratic crises in a sense. For example, a large area near to where I live and also where my business is, as an old public school that I've been staring at since I've lived here, and has literally just sat there vacant, almost as a reminder of what the area was like in a more rampant fashion back in, you know, the 80s and early 90s. And it's areas like this that when you stop and you kind of take a look at it and you start reading more about it, you realize that it's completely unnecessary, and it's the difference really between our neighborhood and then other neighborhoods, for example, like the West Village, where there are a number of positive attributes of the West Village that we here in the East Village, I think, need to take a look at, where, you know, I just don't see as many large vacant footprints of that area just not being addressed and not being dealt with respect to the needs of the local community around it.
The school that you mentioned, is that PS 64?
It is, yeah, or it's termed old PS 64, mm-hmm. as it was the original PS 64, and later after it was decommissioned by the city, back in the 1970s, there was a subsequent PS 64 built nearby, but nowhere near as grand as this original brick building, housing over 100,000 square feet, and actually having entrances on both 9th Street and 10th Street between avenues B and C. It's an impressive building. It's an impressive structure. Most of us here in the neighborhood, particularly if you're to the neighborhood, unfortunately don't view it as impressive, given the fact that it's been vacant for so long. It's really a target for loitering and whatnot. It has a large stretch of wall along 10th Street that, because there's no activity there, it's really a long time eyesore in an area that it's particularly us locals and, you know, us neighbors that strive so hard to really clean up and maintain.
Well, in doing that work, obviously the hope is that something better is going to come to that site. What's planned?
Well, thankfully, with this particular project, and let me just go back a little bit, I think, you know, like most of us here, you know, we're all busy. You know, we work, we have jobs. We pass by these structures, specifically this one, old PS64, look at it and wonder what's been happening there. Well, after about, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, you end up digging a bit further, especially when it's impacting you, not just from your residence, but also with respect to, you know, your local business now. And you find out that it's really unnecessary, the fact that you have this long-time vacancy. In this case, there is a private owner to the property who, unfortunately, has been obstructed over the course of not several years, but amazingly, when we looked at it, 20 years. The plan for the building is, well, first off, it's landmarked. So it's a completely landmarked building by actually a wonderful architect who really doesn't have many structures still up in New York. But essentially the plan by the owner is to renovate it, of course, according to the landmarking, preserving it, and then opening up a dorm facility for local schools and universities, such as, in this case, Adelphi University, local New York school, which they have attached to. Now, for most of us residents, and particularly myself, the idea of, number one, preserving the building, which when you look at it, has a lot of architectural merits. I mean, there's a reason why the city landmarked it in the first place, is huge, because a brick building like this, I would imagine, especially after so many years of non-use, could really start falling apart. And secondly, and I think, you know, even more importantly, to gain a vacancy.
Right.
And gaining a vacancy there, meaning people are on the premises, people now care about where they live, where they operate out of, they will maintain it, and then it will just add to the community. And it will also create a traffic around that area, which is extremely necessary. Again, just walking down the south side of 10th Street between B and C, it feels like the East Village of maybe 25 years ago, still there, in the sense from a safety standpoint or lack thereof.
Hmm. Now, that's certainly impressive to hear. We're talking with Jorge Diaza on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. He is sharing some information with us on the East Village, and he's our guest this hour of our program. We have more to talk with him about. I should remind you, too, that after our 8 o'clock update, Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge program. Ed Randall will be by talking baseball after our 9 o'clock update this Sunday morning. And we will get into more areas of discussion with you, Jorge, as we continue on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. It is Sunday morning on The Fan, and Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge after our top of the hour update at 8 o'clock. Ed Randall is by talking baseball after our 9 o'clock update this Sunday morning. I'm Bob Salter. We're in discussion with Jorge Diaza. He has joined us on our program. He's a business owner in the East Village, also has been involved in doing some community organizing and leadership. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're talking about the East Village. When you talk about this situation with the school building and that land there, you know, with that being not used for so many years, what effect did that have on the community?
It has a big effect. I think any vacancy in communities like these communities here in New York, particularly in downtown New York, they definitely have an effect, whether it be a small storefront, you know, in the center of a block. There's an effect from the standpoint of the way it makes the entire block looks. There's an effect with respect to, you know, the sidewalk area directly in front of that storefront and whether that's maintained clean and lit. There's just a lack of vitality. There's a lack of vibrancy when it comes to these things. Now, that's just the storefront. Now, go ahead and multiply that, you know, by a factor of X when you're thinking about a project like this old PS64 property, which is much larger than a storefront, where you're dealing with essentially, all, you know, almost half a block with entrances on both sides. It has a very negative effect having that level of vacancy in the area covering that size footprint, especially for so long. Lack of activity in an area that big only brings about problems or potential issues, obviously from a safety standpoint, and also, you know, just from a cleanliness standpoint, from the fact that the entire area, which was once, you know, a really beautiful building, is now inherently an eyesore. And it's been an eyesore for very long due to this vacancy. It's something that there's really no excuse for it. This is where, you know, the East Village definitely has some inherent local problems, I think, particularly from local leadership, from officials, from elected officials, where I seriously doubt in any other area, particularly in downtown Manhattan, they would allow for such a lack of progress with respect to, you know, large footprint of their immediate area. especially considering what these properties are now worth. In the case of old PS64, I think we're fortunate that there is a private owner willing to finance what was once a public property for a full-scale renovation. So meaning, you know, our tax dollars won't be paying for this renovation to bring it back to what it was originally. And according to the landmarking, you know, to me, that's a gift when somebody descends and is willing to go ahead and invest all these millions of dollars to not tear down and build it a new image, but to actually restore, you know, a grand building that was akin to the area.
And when we're talking about, you know, this, the impact of this, we also have to talk about the whole petition drive. What was that like?
That was interesting. very grassroots. Well, I was talking a little earlier about, you know, doing some research on the property, because like many of us and, you know, many of us here, I'd walk by it and I just assumed something is being done. You heard a lot of rumors about the property, nothing concrete. Over the course of the last 3 years, particularly in 2014, you know, I even received the news that, oh, finally, there's going to be a renovation on the property. A building permit has been approved and this is going to happen. Wonderful. And then later come to find out that building permit was actually taken away. So myself and a few of my neighbors, you know, got together and just started really researching the property because we weren't believing everything that was out there. And we wanted to decipher fact from, you know, from rumors and fiction. What we found was, you know, honestly, really disheartening. We found that this project had been very much impeded by our own elected officials over the course of all these years. I was really studying the last dozen or so years since it's been landmarked, because I figured once a building like this is landmarked, then at that point, you know, we all have to get into the preservation game. Which is, I would imagine, the idea behind the landmarking in the first place. And what I found was the permitting for this project had been impeded for no solid reason at all. It seems like there's just a very well-connected vocal minority in league with the local officials here, and particularly like, you know, city council seats. And for whatever reason, they have attributed a certain classification to this building for themselves, not a legal classification, but one that they feel the building should be, and are completely ignoring the fact that the building is no longer owned by the city. The building is actually privately owned. And most importantly, the building is decaying before our very eyes. And they have really sought out to obstruct any progress from the building because what's being done is not in league with what their wishes for the building would be, rather than addressing the bigger need, which is for the community, of having something there in the first place.
So how have you gotten involved directly in addressing this?
Oh, correct. I strayed from the question a bit. Apologies. When we started uncovering these items, we immediately saw that there was a building permit that in front of the Department of Buildings that for whatever reason was being a building permit application in front of the Department of Buildings that for whatever reason was being ignored. We then decided to go ahead and on these have a petition drive, and in order to show the Department of Buildings that there was a major need for this project to go up, you know, from the community, and literally a number of us neighbors just you know, photocopied paper petitions. And in the heart of this past winter, just kind of hit the streets every day after 5 o'clock and got a number of signatures from people directly affected by this building who live or work in and around the area. Amazing to us, it was a lot more successful than we even thought it would be. And altogether, you know, we were able to get almost 1,000 signatures from local residents to add to a number of signatures, you know, from the past from local business owners in support of the renovation of this building and the student housing project proposed for it.
And in terms of the proposed dorm, have you been privy to, you know, what this is going to look like when it's completed?
Oh, yes. I mean, and honestly, it's all public information. This was another thing that was amazing to us. It wasn't until I really started kind of looking at the project and doing some research that, you know, I even uncovered a website for the project that literally shows the renderings of the finished dorm student housing project. And it's beautiful. It's what you would expect it to be for a landmark building. If you bring up old photos from the archives of the building, it's really grand. I mean, it has this wonderful courtyard on each side, but particularly the 10th Street side, and this elaborate opening on the 9th Street side that leads to, you know, these, I think about, you know, 5 to 6 floor brick structures with much, you know, open area and beautiful windows kind of surrounding these kind of dome peaks of the building. And so to answer your question, yes, I've seen the renderings and they look great to me and essentially most of the neighbors here in the community. Again, it's just a very strict preservation and enhancement of the building.
And in terms of the approach that you're taking, I mean, obviously you were able to collect signatures on petitions. What do you do with those?
Well, what we did was we collected them and we then contacted, number one, all our local officials with them and asking them for their assistance in doing something very specific. That was advocating for the building permit approval for this building, which the application had been sitting at the desk of the Department of Buildings for an inordinate amount of time. You know, when we got started with the project, I think it was about, you know, 5 to 6 months where the building application had been at the Department of Buildings and had received little to no response from the Department of Buildings. It then went on to about 8 months. And what we did was, besides our local officials reaching out to them, we contacted the Department of Buildings directly, you know, as well as the mayor's office, pretty much every local office related to this that had a mailing address and an email address and a phone number, we went ahead and contacted on all fronts. And I feel like it did have some effect. We definitely need more. You know, the department seemed to react to it, but again, is not reacting in the way that we here in the community, or at least most of us, would favor. So again, what we did was it's just a very direct outreach to again, the local officials and the Department of Buildings with respect to this project, which really all it comes down to is one building permit that was actually already approved back in 2014. And then due to, again, some local pressures from a pretty vocal minority here, was actually taken away. And since then, it's been reapplied for, and for the most part, ignored.
When you talk about the kind of grassroots effort that you've just been describing to us, in the day and age in which we live, obviously social media, the web, very key. How does that factor into your efforts?
Well, the way we did it, again, grassroots would be the best term for it. It was very much person to person, out on the streets, and people literally hand signing paper petitions. But nowadays, you know, they're definitely, I think, more effective ways by which to do this, even though that is a wonderful way to incorporate and to actually, you know, meet more and more of your neighbors. But we decided to further organize and, you know, form local organizations. For example, we are in the process of forming a local residents organization called East Village Cares that, you know, besides this issue with the old PS64, would address a number of current issues that us residents have been noting for, you know, years now, such as, you know, the potential proper cleanup of Tompkins Square Park, which, you know, would include, you know, one thing that does plague this community is the rat infestation. It seems like there's just an inordinate amount of rodents, particularly stemming from Tompkins Square Park in this area, as opposed to others. And there are just a number of common sense items that could be done to address this that have been done in other parts of the city and in many other, you know, major cities around the world, as well as other things like further support, you know, for local residents, both longtime residents and new residents of the community, things that every community member should be aware of, wonderful community resources that they should all take advantage of. Another organization that we are in the process of forming is a local small business organization. And essentially, I feel like that's more needed now than ever, as being a small business owner in the community. It seems nowadays when you open a small business in the community, there just isn't enough help or information from local officials or from the public in general. So in doing this, the name of our organization is the East Village Neighborhood Business Association. We can go ahead and provide this assistance to local business owners, as well as by doing this, maintain this local small business, you know, integrity of the neighborhood, which everyone seems to identify with it, with these homegrown brands of business that later go on to do bigger and better things. I think we all know these days of, you know, restaurant brands like Luke's Lobster, for instance, and, you know, Caracas,
Jorge,
Mama Fuca.
We got to run here. The